You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
Hello, Alan.
How are you today?
I'm good. I'm glad to see a little rain so that our weather can finally cool down.
Yeah, same here. I'm glad it's finally cooling down, period. It's fall is around the corner. Let's bring it. So, and Devin, how are you this fine Sunday morning?
Well, it's not a Sunday. It's a rain day, as John mentioned, and I am fantastic.
Well, good to hear. And yeah, folks, we are recording on a Sunday morning for a change. We usually do Friday mornings, but schedules kind of didn't align this week. So here we are on a Sunday morning, coming to you on a rainy Sunday morning. And Germs and I spent some time at FanX this weekend, had a good time. Devin and I were talking prior to the show. Devin's been at concerts all week long. I mean, guy goes, bounces around and checks out music all week.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you got to do something, right? there's not a lot of basketball to watch.
I know.
But we can certainly talk about what little there is, right, John?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, we can. And so we had some notes for a couple of weeks back when we were planning to record and technical difficulties derailed that completely. So we kind of saved some of those notes because we got to talk about it. So let's address what the top of the notes was the latest news about the mountain jersey and logo.
Yeah, it's kind of old news at this point, but we haven't really had a chance to talk about it. And I saw quotes just a few days ago where they're talking about bringing back the mountain logo, and they said they really listened to their fans, and they had done their research. They had sent out polls and tried to see what feedback was, and there were a lot of fans that really had nostalgia for the mountain logo, and so they brought it back this year.
Nice. And okay, we've talked about it a little bit because we talked about our favorite jerseys on this show about a month ago, but how do we all feel about it?
I don't feel that good about it. I guess it's okay for this year, but so far I haven't really been that enthused about it. I don't really like the teal shadowing on it, and you know, it's what it is. I'll probably get more excited once I'm watching them in the jerseys winning games, but overall I kind of miss music as the theme.
See, and here's the thing. I've talked about this on the show, I think, about the things I don't like with the jersey. I like the font and, you know, just some of the things I wish they would have done an upgrade on it. But for me, what I'm realizing is I like those jerseys more now than I did 20 years ago.
And that's saying a lot.
Mm. And I think the reason is that there is that nostalgia factor for me. It's like, you know what? These aren't the permanent jerseys, so I'm not going to be completely upset. It's a cool nod to the past. Let's enjoy them for what they are. And for me, just be grateful that they aren't the permanent jerseys because I'm with you, John. I like the jazz note. For me, the jazz note is the perfect logo for this team.
The biggest homage to nostalgia on this jersey is the fact that it reminds you of the finals runs. Right. That was the jazz at their peak. So it's a real nice homage to those days. And did you guys, I'm sure you guys saw it, the video that they shared, that the Utah Jazz shared, somebody really did some hot work on that, where they combined the old and new, John Stockton, Jeff Hornacek, Karl Malone with the Rudy Gobert, Joe Ingles and Donovan Mitchell, yeah. Right? That was a sweet, sweet video.
Oh, the video was fantastic.
Yeah.
And
that was really good.
I can't remember who the animator was. I tweeted out his handle to give him the kudos for it, because that was one of the best announcement videos I think I've ever seen. You know, the way they revealed that was very, very cool. So,
well, I'm ready. I am, and I've no bones about it. I've said it on here. I've said it out on Twitter. Let's not get rid of the city jerseys, though. Those are easily one of my favorites, you know, of the jerseys. And it sounds like they're going to keep the court and they're going to keep the jersey for a bit. And I'm okay alternating between those a little bit during the season too. I hope. I'd like to see them do that. I don't know what it was about it. I love it.
I think John kind of hinted at this, but for me, the important thing is not the jersey. It's seeing them win games in the jerseys.
Yes.
So, you know, if they go out and they lose every game in those jerseys, we are never going to want to see them again, I think.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? They had some success in the city jerseys. It's been fun. We'll let it run its course. And I like having these new things kind of come back around. You know, I've said before, I'd like to see the Sundiata Gaines throwbacks to the 70s or whenever that was. I'd like to see them do some new innovative things that are kind of in the same vein as the city jerseys, or you know, mix it up a little bit. But, you know, for now, it should be a good mix for this season, and I think it'll be fun. And more than anything, I think I'm looking forward to seeing the court and the whole product as a whole together.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. By the way, last bit of news. We really don't have a lot of Jazz to talk this week. Did you guys, both of you, get a chance to read Tony Jones' Athletic posts or articles on The Athletic this week? He did a couple of them. One, I think, was either earlier this week or last week. The other one was a follow-up a couple days ago about the first one was the positives that we can expect out of the Jazz. The second one was if the rails came off, if things went wrong, here are the kind of things that could derail the Jazz's chances to be really good this year. Did you guys read those two pieces?
I don't get The Athletic.
Okay. Well, I mean, even if you don't, you get free previews. You can read both of them in a month.
That's true.
But
you're right.
I mean, they were both worth it. I took some time to read them. Great pieces. Tony Jones talked about some of the things that this week, especially, that could derail the Jazz. He talked about the injury factor. He talked, which you know, I think that might be the biggest concern is the injury bug. Can they stay healthy? And I think there's been a few people that have gone, with the FIBA basketball going on, because there was a moment for Rudy and a moment for Donovan. We don't want something catastrophic to happen. But the injuries, I think, were one of the biggest things talking about. But then the absence of Derek Favors, interestingly enough, was one of the things he talked about that could prove to be one of those things the Jazz may not recover from this year, but yet they still can. But he just he just offered some different points as to what could be prove, you know, obstacles in the Jazz's rise in the West this year. Great pieces. Anybody get a chance, you need to check them out. They're worth it. On that note, is there anything that you think of what I mentioned or more that could derail the Jazz's rise to the?
Because I feel like there's most of the stuff they got out of Favors they're going to be able to get out of Ed Davis. Because I feel like there's most of the stuff they got out of Favors they're going to be able to get out of Ed Davis. Favors is clearly a much better player than Davis, but I feel like Davis covers a majority of what they're missing out, and they're gaining on so many other things. And the thing that Locke's really been emphasizing the past couple weeks is how much better Rudy does when he has a stretch four on the floor, or basically just Rudy without Favors in general. And so now that we know that those minutes aren't going to be with Favors, but they're going to be with, you know, Bogdanovich and other guys who can stretch the floor, I think that will also compensate for what they lose by not having Favors there, especially as the backup five.
Right.
So I feel like Davis is going to be about 60% of what Favors was as your backup five, but whoever is starting at the four overall is going to be that much more positive for the team in their offensive efficiency. So yeah, Favors is missed. I would really enjoy him to still be on this team, but I'm not that worried that they're going to lose that much. And with all the changes they've made, they are overall, well, they should overall be a better team this year than they were last year.
Right. The other thing that one of the other things he did mention in there, and this is where I go back to, we talk about injuries and whatnot. I think outside of injuries, the biggest factor for the Jazz this year is connectivity, cohesion as a group. And that's one of the things that Tony Jones talked about. Can they come together? Can the chemistry, can it flourish? And can they flourish and as a cohesive unit this year? And if they can, you're right, sky's the limit. They are so good. On paper, everything about them speaks volumes to just how good they can be if they can be a cohesive unit on the floor, if the chemistry is right. So outside of injury, yep. I think chemistry is their biggest thing. So, yeah, it's worth it. If you get a chance, check it out. Tony Jones wrote him up this week. Very good piece. So, also, final note, 28 days, folks. 28 days from the day we're recording right now, Jazz preseason. We are less than a month away.
Yay.
Yeah. Bring it. Let's go. All right, moving on to some NBA news and notes. What did you want to hit on this week?
Well, I thought we could talk a little bit more about Team USA basketball, since that's what's getting played. I was reading a story today about how of the 32 teams, USA ranks only 8th in offense, and that it really is going to be defense that's going to keep them in. We know it's the, I don't know a good way to put it, it's the least talented team they've put together in quite some time. They're all talented, but just they just don't compare to any of the previous teams that they've sent out there since before the Dream Team. But the guys are hanging on with their defense. The offense just hasn't really clicked for them yet. And, you know, they're going to need it to click in if they're going to march on to get gold. And I think part of it is they need this time to get more familiar. Part of it is some of the rules are different. The ball's a little bit smaller. That can affect your shooting. I feel like they're on an upward trajectory overall, but this is the most the USA has felt like an underdog in forever.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. So my question is, aside from the obstacles you just talked about with their youth and their inexperience and the lack of talent a little bit, if they can pull it together and win, who are the two, and I'm just gonna ask for two, the two biggest obstacles team wise that they're gonna have to face to win gold?
Despite what they've been going through, I still think Serbia is a big obstacle for them. And I'm not sure who else to put up, because the past week of games, a lot of teams have looked vulnerable. It feels like parity. It feels like there's a lot of parity in the tournament this year.
Okay.
I was really glad how they were able to handle Greece fairly easily. I still think that they will face their challenges with France. France has been looking pretty good.
Rudy!
But, you know, once they were able to dispatch with Greece the way they were, I have felt a lot more confident about their chances overall. But they can't get complacent. Even if they wind up in the top seed of their bracket when they go forward, they can't be complacent, because we are seeing parity. I mean, Spain's been looking good, you know, Croatia. I mean, their teams have been fairly even. I mean, really.
I think Australia might be the most veteran team of the world, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's a good one.
And so I kind of wonder if they could pose, I mean, they've obviously posed a threat to the U.S. already. They beat them for the first time ever, right? That's the first time Australia's ever beat the U.S.? Or was it the first time in many years or something like that? It's been a long time.
I think it might have been ever.
Yeah, I think it was ever. But yeah, Australia is a veteran team. And look at how many NBA players they have on that team. I think they have 5 or 6 guys that legitimately play in the NBA. You've got, you know, Bogut. You've got Ingles. You've got Patty Mills. Bane. Baines. Who else am I missing? Dellavedova. I mean, the list goes on. That was 5 guys I could think of off the top of my head that have played in the NBA or do play in the NBA. They're, like I said, they might be the most veteran team, and that's the team that I thought all along might be one of those obstacles they face. And then France, you brought up France. France intrigues me simply because they've got a good group of NBA players. And oh, by the way, they happen to have the best defensive player in the world on their team. All of that could prove to be a pretty big obstacle for Team USA. Because Rudy and Fournier and Man, I was just talking about him yesterday. Why am I? Oh, Batum. The three of them, that's like their big three, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then they've got another guy on that team that is NBA talent, but I mean, or is probably good enough. He could be in the NBA, but he's a very good player for them. I can't think of his name, but that team's sound. So, but you're right. There's a lot of parity in world basketball right now. There really is. And I hadn't even thought of Serbia. I'm glad you brought them up. I hadn't even thought of them. I guess the next question I'm asking, I'm going to ask both of you to answer this. Does Team USA win gold this year in FIBA? Yes or no?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even without a deep team or a team of superstars like what they've had in years past, they should be collectively the best group of talent in the world. Like,
yeah,
that's just a fact.
Right.
And so it doesn't matter if you have a Giannis or if you have, like you're saying, several NBA players on another team. You have a full team of NBA talent.
Right.
Yeah, they need to win it all. Anything less than a gold, I think, is a disappointment.
How big of a disappointment, though? Because I don't know that are you willing to write it off as a slight disappointment? Say, okay, this. You could have all your reasons in the world why they didn't, and probably let it slide, no big deal.
Well, it's not like the bronze medal team level disappointment.
Okay.
But it is a disappointment nonetheless.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. The bronze one, you know, that team, it felt like there was a good chunk of the country that was kind of hoping they'd lose. The NBA had a worse reputation back then, and there were a lot of players on the team that fans just didn't like. And it just felt a lot more divisive. And after they underperformed, that's when they really decided we got to reevaluate how we're throwing Team USA together. We can't just take, you know, 12 all-stars and just assume it's all going to work out. And so they put more emphasis on team after that. This team, I think there's going to be more people rooting for them because they're the ones who answered the call when several NBA players just said no. And I don't know what the odds are. It feels like if they're favored, they're only slight favorites just because of how competitive is this year. I mean, they still got to face Brazil tomorrow, and Brazil,
right.
Brazil has their own talents that they got to deal with. So, you know, I feel like if this team winds up getting bronze, it will not be seen as near the disappointment as it was, way back when.
But yeah, because I can see a lot of people explaining it away. Oh, they weren't talented enough. Oh, they were a young squad. Oh, the big stars walked away from it. And it's just, and see, that's okay. I'm going to get on a slight soapbox here. That's another thing that frustrates me is when big stars walk away from playing world basketball, you know, and maybe I have to understand their reasons behind it, but you know, to me, I don't know that there is a reason to do so. You're representing your country. And it should have nothing to do with money or anything else beyond. You're representing your country, and that should be pride enough to put you out on the court.
I hear you, but yeah. I go back to CJ McCollum's answer. CJ McCollum said he didn't do it because there wasn't a guarantee that he would be on the team next year. Oh. And he was worried about injuries. He was worried about, you know, Team USA isn't paying him. Portland's paying him, and Portland's put a lot of investment in him. And he just ultimately decided that he needed to, that if he was guaranteed that he would be on the team next year, he would have done it. But as it wasn't a guarantee and he just got all this money from Portland, he felt like he needed to focus on getting healthy. And his answer is one that 10 or 15 other guys would have had. You know, I really need to get my health back together. It's a vacation time, and they don't want to put their body through the extra wear and tear of FIBA.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Like I said, without understanding their reasons, that was my soapbox for a moment, but okay. I get that. Yeah. All right. Not a lot of NBA news and notes to hint on. There was a couple things you didn't put in, but did you see, Dwight Howard's little video with the Lakers? He's back. Happy to be back.
Oh yeah, that's how long it's been since we recorded.
yeah, it has been.
Dwight's back in LA. Yeah.
Yep, and he was happy to kind of share that his thoughts about that over over social media with a little video response. Do we know whether Joe Johnson ended up signing with the 76ers, or is he still eyeballing a comeback and that's a possibility?
Last I saw, he was still eyeballing, but
okay,
they haven't made an official.
Okay.
And, you know, if they get him, great. He'll join some other Jazz players on that team, and I think he will be good for your occasional regular season game. He can still score. The defense is just something that it's just not there anymore.
And he's still the most clutch player in the world. Sorry, guys. He just is.
It was awesome watching him on the big three just dominate.
Well, and then hitting that game winner to win it all for the big three. Like, seriously, the guy is one of the most that what when he was with the Jazz, they talked about it. He was the most clutch player in the last, decade of the NBA. And then he goes out and does it at the big three, too. It's like the guy's just ice water in his veins, man. That's all there is. Just straight ice water in those veins. So, all right. Well, that is it for the NBA news and notes. Let's move on to Devin's quick hits.
Okay, quick hits. There was a little bit of news I don't think we touched on for the NBA. Eric Gordon and the Rockets agreeing to a 4-year, $76 million contract. I believe the fourth year was only guaranteed if he's either an all-star or an NBA champion. What are your guys' thoughts on that deal, and how does that impact the Rockets moving forward, where they have Clint Capella, now they have Russell Westbrook, and of course they have James Harden?
Doesn't surprise me, but man, does that strap them for cash in the coming years.
Yes, it does, but if you're going to be strapped, you might as well go all in. Gordon is a crucial piece for them. He is the fourth most important player on that team. And sure, why not? If you're gonna have all these guys, you know, it's not like Harden and Westbrook are, well, Westbrook, because of just the way he plays, you don't know how long his body's gonna go. But you have Harden locked up in his prime, Capella's locked up at a good rate. Gordon, this is a slight raise for him. You might as well lock him in too, and just ride or die with his group. And if it doesn't work, then they all have very tradable contracts in 2 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, go for it.
Okay. This is old news a little bit. We're going back something we probably would have covered last week, but Brooklyn Nets player Wilson Chandler facing a 25-game suspension for testing positive for PED use. It seems like we haven't seen much PED use in the NBA. Am I wrong? Usually it's it's, you know, like a marijuana incident or something, but
right.
Does this surprise you that Chandler would be the guy for this to happen to? And is 25 games sufficient or too much? Or where are we at with this?
No, it doesn't surprise me. And 25 games, as far as I'm concerned, seems fitting. I loved reading his backpedals thereafter and how people actually proved a lot of his backpedaling wrong, too. It's just hilarious. The whole situation is just a mess.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me for someone like him. And I think 25 games is good. And this is kind of a warning, discouragement, determinant for guys who find themselves as being the 11th, 12th man on the roster and want to get that extra edge to try to move themselves up. I think that's the boat Chandler was in, because people have just kind of written him off and they don't think that he's going to be able to do much. So sounded like he tried to cut corners to advance himself, and this will, you know, he's going to miss a third of the season almost, and this is kind of a warning shot to all other guys in a similar situation, is don't do this because you will get caught and it'll be publicized.
Okay. Moving on, next quick hit. We're going to stick with the NBA theme for a few minutes. There was a little bit of buzz about KD and Kyrie pushing the Nets to sign Melo, since we were just talking about the Nets. Do you think Melo ends up finding a spot on an NBA roster this year?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I do.
Okay. What team do you see him signing with? Do you see him ending up somewhere where there are superstars, like with the Lakers or with the Nets? Or do you see him?
That's where he wants to end up, I imagine. But I don't know that that's going to happen, because I'm not sure a lot of the competitive, you know, higher echelon tier teams are going to want to put him on their team because of what he's been the last few years. So I don't know that he ends up on one of those. I think he ends up on a mid-level team.
Okay. John, I'm gonna pass to you on this. Why would a mid-level team want him? Because he's not going to go to a bottom dweller because, one, he doesn't want to go there. Two, there's no point.
Well, before he answers that, I want him to tell me if he agrees. Is he going to be in the NBA this next year?
Personally, I would think not, but I just know that some NBA teams make dumb decisions sometimes. I see him going to a team, you know, we get into, I'd be surprised if he signed anywhere before the season started.
Okay.
Unless KD and Kyrie are really, really pushy. Then maybe Brooklyn goes, fine. I could see him signing once we get a month into the NBA season and you have some team that struggled a bit out of the gate, that thought they'd be doing a little better, but they're like a 500 team and their defense is better than their offense. That's the type of scenario where I could see them going, what if we add Carmelo? He can give us scoring off the bench. The defensive liabilities we can offset because of other guys on our roster.
Right.
Let's go for it.
Again, that's one of those mid-level teams I mentioned. I mean, and actually, I think the East is likely the landing spot when you're talking about that, because the West is just way too competitive, and there's not, I don't see that there's going to be a Western Conference contending team or even mid-level team that's going to want him on the team. I think it's going to have to be in the East.
So when you say mid-level, where are you thinking in the playoff run of those 15 teams?
Well, it's like what John said. I think it's going to be someone that's going to be around, that they're going to be around 500 during the early part of the season when he comes on with them. And this is why I think it's going to be the East. When he comes on with them, they're going to end right there at that 500 level or slightly above, and they're going to be that fifth, sixth, or seventh seed, fourth seed, fifth seed, somewhere around there in the East. You agree, John?
Yes. Yeah. See, I could see some team like Detroit going,
yes,
gosh, is there a way that we can get him on here?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's how I see that going.
And Detroit would be an interesting one.
Right.
You know, you got Drummond, mm-hmm. you got Rose, you got Blake Griffin. You had Melo in there. I don't know, maybe.
And right now, Brooklyn is that team, though. That's why it would make sense, mm-hmm. because Brooklyn is that team. They don't have KD. And maybe for right now, Brooklyn says, you know what, guys, we'll do it because we don't have KD. We'll put Melo on the floor with Kyrie and see how that works for a bit.
Okay. Next quick hit. There was that little bit of drama between Kobe and Shaq. Kobe says, oh, I'd have 12 rings if Shaq had my work ethic. You know, Shaq jokes, oh, I thought you were talking about that Dwight guy, spells his name wrong. then post something about, you know, how he didn't work hard and it's him dunking over a bunch of guys, if I remember right. Is the Kobe Shaq beef ever going to be fully resolved, or do you think are they playing this up, or is there really some animosity still there between those two?
I think they're playing it up.
I do too. I mean, I think it feels like they do this every off season to just kind of have some fun and make headlines in August. You know, it then makes people come out of the woodwork and stand for either one, choose sides. And, you know, when it comes to those two, I'm on Shaq's side, but I think this time around, when the comments seem really nasty and it makes headlines, and then both of them are like, nah, it's fine. It's all good.
Yeah.
But then a few days later they poke again.
Yes.
So yeah, it's amazing.
And I'm with you. I'm on Shaq's side. Although Kobe does make a point. I think Shaq's, care of his body declined a bit during the waning years of his career, and he probably could have extended his career a little longer had he taken better care of himself.
Yeah, but Kobe always conveniently forgets the fact that he told the Lakers organization after they had won their third ring, it's either him or me.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's a convenient thing to forget, right?
Yeah.
All right. Last NBA quick hit. I haven't heard any news on it lately, but there was another DeMarcus Cousins incident where an arrest warrant had been issued for him on a domestic violence charge. You guys remember this? This was
yep.
a little over a week
yeah.
ago. Just to kind of recap, I believe the incident was DeMarcus was getting married, and his baby mama, who he is not getting married to, was not going to let his son attend the wedding. They have a conversation via telephone, if I remember correctly, or maybe it wasn't via phone. Either way, he threatens her life She's recording this conversation without his knowledge, and, you know, here we are because she was not going to let his son attend his wedding. With this, we're all going to agree, no party is in the right here. You know, you shouldn't be using your child against your other child, the other parent. You shouldn't be threatening someone's life. Both are just wrong. But I want to ask you from a basketball standpoint. Now, DeMarcus is out for the season with his injury. I don't know if he's ever going to really come back from the injury. But what precedent would this set? Because this has been an incident that we haven't really seen in the NBA. We've seen it in the NFL quite a bit.
Well, so let me ask you a quick question. Where did this take place? Was it in California?
I'm going to assume, but I don't
know. The reason why I ask is a few years ago, when this whole thing with the Clippers went down too, I seem to remember there's a law in California where you can't record without the knowledge of the other person. So I'm wondering how this is going to go down in court too, and whether they can throw it out as non-evidence because it was without his consent in California. And I, again, somebody's listening to this. Somebody knows the law. They can tell me this, but I, for some reason, remember hearing that that is an actual law in California. Now, that said, back to your question, he's with the Warriors, right?
No, he's with the Lakers
now. That's right. He's with the Lakers. I don't know that you want that around you, but we've seen situations in the past where teams have said, okay, we forgive and forget, especially the Lakers. Need we bring up Kobe's situation again? But this is uniquely different. I don't know if the Lakers, especially with a guy who's injured like this, especially with something like this, if they want to deal with that, maybe they cut him and let him go. Cut ties and say, we're done.
It was in Georgia.
Okay.
Let's see. Cousins was in Georgia and baby mama was in Alabama.
Okay.
That's what it looks like.
So my point was a non-factor, but still that first point was the second point though. What do you think, John? I mean, what did the Lakers do?
Well, and I don't even mean just the Lakers. I mean, where does the league stand on something like this?
That's
because
true.
The league is going to be the one to come down, I think.
Right.
The league will come down. He's kind of already punished because he has to miss this season. One thing I haven't found yet, and I hope I make this point right, it was just words. I mean, they're very serious words. He threatened to put a bullet in her head, if I remember what the actual words were. But it's much different than if he had actually, like, beat her up. That would be several worse levels. But okay. The baggage that he already brings, you just add to the mentality that still at this point in his career, he thinks it's okay to tell her that he's going to put a bullet in her head, you know, and he's not going to be what he was when he comes back because of that injury. And he already had his deficiencies before the injury, even though a lot of people are like, oh, he's a perennial all-star. And it's like, yeah, but it's still easy to figure out how to beat him. He's just too easy to get in his head, to get him to pout when things don't go his way on offense so you can get a transition bucket on defense. I mean, there were deficiencies in his game anyway.
Right.
That he just wasn't consistent. So you just add this, you just show that even now at his age, he's still acting like this and thinking that's okay. You know, he's in a similar boat to Carmelo in that, what on the court does he actually give you that is worth the deficiencies?
Right.
You know, and Melo, all I hear is he's a model guy in the locker room and everything. It's just that his game has so many holes that who really wants to take a risk on it? DeMarcus, it's like his game has holes, but then you have the extra X factor of just really not knowing where his head's going to be and how, you know, what DeMarcus scandal might happen right around the corner.
And back to Devin's point, is he really ever going to be the player he was after this injury anyway? So this all of this may be a moot point because he may not be able to make a comeback in the NBA.
I guess my thought was, what precedent does this set for future incidents? You know, if it's a guy who is able to contribute on the court, who's maybe a bench player, he's not a superstar, you know what I mean? What does the league do? And I don't know where the answer is.
I don't know where the answer is either, but I would have to think that Adam Adam Silver is going to have to make a precedence with it. He's going to have to make something happen.
Yeah, something has to be handed down, right?
Right, right.
Okay. We'll follow it and see what happens. Want to touch on a couple football things. NFL season is starting up. News we missed last week. Wanted to talk about Andrew Luck retiring. After all the injuries. Fans actually booed him when the news broke.
And then they went after him over social media too. And some of them were ESPN's Doug Gottlieb had something stupid to say about it too.
Is that how you say his name?
Yes.
Gottlieb? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What? Oh, I didn't
ultimate
agree.
Millennial behavior.
Yes.
Something. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on this? I've personally got to respect the guy for saying, you know what, there's more to life than football.
Yeah.
I'm a Stanford grad. You know, he's done all he can. He contributed. He was a fantastic player when he could be healthy. But sometimes you just got to listen to your body, right?
Right.
Yeah. I understand fans' knee-jerk reaction because – you know, Lions fans did the same thing when Barry Sanders suddenly retired on them right before the season. But you kind of take a day and recover and really look at it. And when I look at his explanation, it all makes sense because he wasn't 100%. He was going to start the season injured again. And he's walking away from millions of dollars by retiring now. He has his health and $100 million, so he doesn't really need to put himself through that anymore.
And
I get it. I get it. I understand it.
But like you said, he could have gotten a payday, gotten an extension, strapped the team for more money. How happy would fans be in that situation, right, Alan?
Right. No, I agree. And I go back to the Niners. The Niners recently had something happen like that within the last 5 years. Patrick Willis, top of his game, big time linebacker. You guys both remember him, right? So good.
Yeah.
Just a gem of a player. And whether it was because the organization really was very unsettled and falling apart, or whether it was because Patrick Willis finally decided my health and my life is more important to me than what's on the field, he retired from football very early. Might I add, he was, like I said, he was at the top of his game playing extremely well. I applaud players who recognize this. Quality of life matters to them, and they need to walk away before they ruin that potential quality of life.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a perfect transition into my next quick hit.
Okay.
Because you're talking about the physical, but there are players who maybe seem like they have a little bit of early onset CTE symptoms.
Yes.
And one of those, until yesterday, was signed with the Raiders. I want to talk about the Antonio Brown drama.
Yeah.
He gets traded from Pittsburgh, ends up in Oakland. He gets frostbite, gives himself frostbite during the cryo-whatever therapy. He gets fined for not doing practices. He posts the fine letter on his Instagram page. He...
Don't forget his helmet.
He throws a fit over his helmet, says he's not going to play unless he can wear his helmet. He has a conversation with Coach Gruden, who he records the conversation and turns it into a YouTube video and puts it online. He gets into a verbal altercation with the GM, where he shouts racial terminology at the GM. They patch everything up, and then he starts saying, "Cut me." Well, he ends up getting his wish. He is cut, and then he signs a one-year up to $15 million deal with the New England Patriots.
Right.
Is this guy crazy, or is he a genius?
Both?
Yeah, both.
Because let's be honest here. He got all eyes on him for this whole offseason.
Right.
He gets out of the contract playing in Oakland. He still gets paid. Now he goes with – aren't they the – reigning champs? Who won the Super Bowl last year? I don't even remember. Was it New England?
I believe so. Yes.
That's funny.
And they should be favorites again with that addition.
Right.
And you've got a 40-year-old quarterback who is still playing at the top of his game, and now he's going to be throwing to arguably the best wide receiver in the game.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, the Patriots now have Josh Gordon, A.B., and Demaryius Thomas, all as wide receivers.
And don't forget, did you mention Amendola?
No, they got Edelman, too.
Or, I mean, Edelman, not Amendola. Edelman, that's what I meant.
I mean, come on, guys. I want to say AB is nuts, and that's what I've been thinking. And then he goes and signs this deal and gets paid, and I'm like, you know what? Maybe he knew what he was doing.
Okay, that's why I say both. But, you know, you think about this for a minute. This is where the genius comes in. You know that Pittsburgh wasn't going to trade him to New England. It wasn't going to happen. And I don't know whether the price would have been right, whether New England would have done it anyway. But they trade him to a place you know he doesn't want to be. He does not want to be in Oakland. So, yeah, it is genius on his part. But I think he's a little level crazy, too. There's a lot to it.
There's a lot to unpack here. So I want to ask, this is my quick hit. AB and the Patriots, does it work out?
Yeah, it will. You know it will.
No, it won't.
It won't. Okay.
No, it won't.
Why not?
Because I think AB is still a little too volatile, and plus the Patriots have only won the Super Bowl every other year, and so I think this is a year they don't win. And I think a lot of it's going to be blamed on AB, just because.
Okay, so you're saying that you're saying the Patriots weren't going to win it anyway, but now they have their out.
Yeah, they have their fall guy. They bring him in, and he is their fall guy.
Do you think
they they could Randy Moss him and it didn't work?
Let me ask you this, John. Do you think he racks up the yards at least? Even if there's some drama?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes, I do. If he was on my fantasy team, I would be happy. But yeah.
Here's why I also think it works for the Patriots. Because now you have a guy who legitimately will draw the defense to him, and that's going to open up more lanes for Edelman and more lanes for guys down the middle. This automatically just makes the Patriots offense that much better, and AB may not even catch anything this year or may not have to.
Oh, yeah. You got that many targets. I mean, it's easy for Brady, right? Now, John, you said the word fantasy. I have one more NFL quick hit. I drafted Melvin Gordon, who is in a contract dispute with the Chargers. Last I heard, he was seeking a trade. Did I make a mistake in drafting him?
No, it'll pan out.
Okay, that's what I thought.
It'll either work out or he'll get traded. Either way, he will start being productive.
Yeah. He'll be ready come playoff time for me, right? Okay. I feel better. Last section we want to talk about is NCAA. We want to talk some college football.
Local.
I want to touch on two teams. Let's start with the Holy War, which we missed last week. Were you guys surprised by the outcome of that game? And what did you take away from it?
I wasn't surprised by the loss. I was surprised by maybe the lopsidedness of it, if you will. I thought it would be closer. And what did I take away from it? You know, I take away from it what I thought other people did. There is a talent gap, although I don't think it's a talent gap at your offensive positions, if you will, key positions. It's a gap on the lines, dude. The defensive line and offensive lines, there's a clear gap in those. And you saw it again, and I know you're going to get to this. You saw it again against Tennessee yesterday. That defensive line is, for BYU, is not great. They're not. And the offensive line struggled to protect their quarterback. So there's a clear talent gap on the lines is where I'm speaking, because they have a good quarterback. They have a good running back that I think are clear cut, very good, but it's those lines where you're seeing the discrepancy.
And you make a point. If you don't have a line, you can't protect your quarterback
and you can't play defense
and you can't run the ball. Yeah. You can't get
the push on the other, which again, Tennessee ran the ball against them yesterday very well. That's 2 weeks in a row where two teams went right down their throat and the line couldn't stop them. So it goes back to lines on both sides. That's my thoughts.
Okay. John.
Yeah. I wasn't surprised because I feel like Utah is a perennial top 25 team and BYU so far has yet to prove that we should expect them to be any more than a 500 team. They went 9-4 under Satake's first year. They went 4-9 the next year. They were only 7-6 last year. I'm just not seeing evidence that I should have had faith that they would beat Utah. And they barely beat Tennessee, so good for them. But the talent pool, you know, Utah's been in a Big Five for so long that it's just so much easier for Utah to recruit the talent. And BYU, just they've suffered from the independence is nice because you get on ESPN a lot, but they're clearly just not getting the recruits that they were
that paycheck,
you know, 10, 20 years ago.
That paycheck is nice too. It's real tough to walk away from something like that right now.
There's more to life than money, Alan.
Yeah.
I know, but
I'm kidding. Yeah. No, but I guess what we're saying is BYU, after winning against Tennessee, how do you feel about their season? You think, I mean, they'll be bowl eligible, right?
Yes, they will. And I still think they're going to be good. And I still could see them squeak out 8 wins this year. I mean, that's not a bad year. And let me make this clear, too. For anyone calling for Kalani Sitake's head, please stop. This isn't Sitake. This isn't on him. So I just wish people would stop.
Well, in Kalani's defense, he got stuck with someone with no head coaching experience and no collegiate college coaching experience.
But then he takes
as a coordinator for a couple of years.
And he takes his dream job, knowing what he's getting into, coaching at an organization where he can help young men like he wants to, but knowing that the odds are stacked against him in recruiting and in everything else. It is what it is. You're not going to get a coach in here that I think is going to be able to do to balance it very well anymore. I think Kalani still is your guy, and we need to rally around him because I think he's the guy still.
Okay, and just to kind of wrap this up, I want your take on Utah. What do you expect from Utah after seeing them play against BYU and getting the win at home yesterday against NIU?
Sounded like they struggled in the first half against NIU yesterday, didn't they?
I was unable to watch the game.
I heard they did, but they opened up the second half, played really well. I think they're very good, but I still think I think they're the best team in the South, Pac-12 South. Although I'm seeing some people saying USC starting to look really good.
USC looked scary.
Yeah.
Especially once they got into the second quarter yesterday.
But then you get to the other side of the ball, Washington and Oregon. Guys, this is going to be an interesting year for the Utes because they have all they look good. Their defense is as advertised, but Washington, Oregon, very, very good as well. And this could be interesting. The Pac-12 is an opportunity for the Utes this year, probably more so than it has been in years past, but they've also got two or three other teams that are extremely good to face up against.
Okay. John.
Yeah. I think the Utes problem is, it always feels like they lose one or two games every year that they really shouldn't. And you know, you kind of go back over the record. It's like 9-4, 7-6, 9-4, 10-3. This feels like they are as solidly put together as they have been in years. But I have felt that way about them almost every year the past few years. Is that this is a team that's going to be able to make a splash. This is a team that's going to be able to threaten. And yet, like Charlie Brown trying to kick the football, I'm going to say, they feel like they're going to be a really good team this year. I don't think they'll quite make the national championship. I think they're still going to have one or two losses, but this feels like just a two-loss team to me this year. I think the Utes are going to be really good. So be in a prestigious bowl, but you know, I can't just, you know, I don't have faith that they're going to win all the games they should and then pull off the one or two that they shouldn't.
Right.
Okay. That's fair. All right, that's a lot of quick hits, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up there.
All right, let's move on to pop culture. John, you have a movie you wanted to talk about.
Yes, it's been so long. The movie I saw that came out the most recently was Ready or Not, and it is kind of a thriller horror comedy. It's about a woman who's marrying into a really rich family, and the family has their tradition that the... Was it the night before the wedding or the night of the wedding? No, it was the night of the wedding. It's like after they get married, they have to play a game because this family is they got all their wealth from board games, and they randomly choose the game. And the game they choose with her, the game that gets chosen is hide and seek. And when this family plays hide and seek, they play to the death. And so she has to scramble all over the house and just try to survive the night while this family is trying to kill her. And it's pretty funny. I would compare it most to the movie You're Next, which was a horror movie that came out about 4 years ago, that I think is underwatched and underappreciated. This was kind of like that. It had a lot of funny stuff, you know, on purpose. Had some surprising gore a couple spots, but I was overall entertained. I got exactly what I wanted and expected out of it. So I had a lot of fun with it.
Nice.
But you know, we're at the end of August, beginning September. The movies really just kind of dwindled. There's a lot of crap that studios are just kind of throwing on the screens that they just didn't think could make money. The big one this week is It Chapter Two, which I haven't had a chance to see yet, but I will be seeing that sometime this week and enjoying that in the fall.
Awesome. The other thing we didn't get a chance to talk about, cause we haven't done so for a while, but, D23, did their weekend, and lots of big announcements for Marvel and Star Wars coming out of it. Did you get a chance to see all of them and hear some of the things they all talked about?
Oh yeah. Yeah. The one I'm really excited about is we're actually going to get a She-Hulk TV show. I think that's awesome.
So yeah. And there was a couple things. There was She-Hulk. There was,
Ms. Marvel.
Yeah. Ms. Marvel.
Moon Knight.
Yeah. And, then they started talking about some of the other series like the Falcon and,
Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, Falcon Winter Soldier.
Loki's going to have his own show.
Yep.
WandaVision's going to be a show, which I'm assuming is a prequel series or a here's what Wanda and Vision were doing before the events of Infinity Wars, guess.
Right. Lots of things coming about for Marvel. And
Hawkeye's going to be training a girl.
Oh, that's right.
Take over form.
That's right.
That series.
And then a Black Widow movie, was it? That I think they're still talking about too. So lots of things coming.
That's filming. Black Widow opens in May.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But a lot of things on the docket at D23 regarding Marvel, and it really makes you excited. And the thing was, is they used this opportunity to talk about these things and then to talk about the platform that they're going to be releasing everything on, and that is Disney Plus, that's coming up in November. In fact, that transitions to the other one, and that's Star Wars. Disney Plus kicking off on November 12th, and wouldn't you know it, they're kicking off with The Mandalorian, which excites me. You saw that trailer, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so exciting to see The Mandalorian come around. They're already, you know, that trailer got me way excited. They're already talking about what it is, that it takes place post Return of the Jedi. In fact, one of the things that they released official this last week on EW is that you're going to delve into the early days and stages of the First Order with this series. This is going to delve into the early beginnings of the First Order. So really excited about that. Of course, they talked about the Clone Wars will be released in February, the final season in February on D+. And then the sizzle reel for Star Wars. And you saw that. You know, we talked about that yesterday. I mean, not everybody made it, but Idiots Array Podcast. We were at FanX Live, talked about it yesterday. Real a fun event. But you excited for this movie coming out in December?
Yeah, I am. I am. I'm one of those that, you know, I liked Force Awakens. I had my issues with it, but I still liked it. I liked Last Jedi. I had different issues with it, but I still liked it. I don't think it deserves all the hate it got. And I'm excited to see how they take the elements from the first two movies and give us a solid conclusion. I feel like Rise of Skywalker is really going to cement in people's minds how they feel about the trilogy overall. I feel like a lot hinges on it. Is it going to be a big fizzle like the third Matrix movie, or is it going to be something that really just wraps it all up very nicely?
And it's going to have to, and it's not just the trilogy that we're wrapping up. This wraps up the entire saga. This is the ninth and final film that wraps everything up. So talk about pressure on JJ to get it done. This is huge.
Yeah.
So that's it for the events that I've kept up on the last couple of weeks. I can't think of anything else. And Netflix, I haven't really binged a lot lately. I started watching Woo Assassins, which was interesting. You might want to check it out, but I don't know how I feel about it yet. I need to get a few more episodes in. Devin?
I watched Good Place season 3 on Netflix. So if you're following that, it's now available. But there was one thing I wanted to talk about. We've mentioned it briefly before. But this time I want to talk about a Golden Lion. A Golden Lion being an award that was won this past weekend at the Venice Film Festival.
Okay.
Joker takes home Best Picture.
Yes.
Yeah, there are some early indications that this film's going to be very good and good for DC.
Yeah. And it's supposedly very, very dark.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting. I'm trying to gauge how I feel about it. I am excited nonetheless. But here's one of those things that I didn't know. John, I'm sure you knew this. It's directed by Todd Phillips. And I'm not a big movie guy, so I don't know who Todd Phillips is until I Google.
Oh,
and
yes.
I start looking down, and I see he's done the Hangover movies. He did Old School, Due Date, the Starsky and Hutch remake, Road Trip. This seems very out of his bag.
Yeah, it does.
Does it not?
Yeah, it does.
It does, but I would say if you're taking a character like the Joker, there's going to be a lot of comedy / dark comedy as you then get more and more twisted. And I go back to The Hangover, which I think is one of the funniest movies of the past 10 years. You can ignore the sequels. And that movie is very dark. One of the funniest scenes I thought, and this sounds bad repeating if you haven't seen the movie, but I thought one of the funniest scenes in the movie is when they're at the hospital and Bradley Cooper is like really worried that he might have been raped, and just the waiting for the doctor who's so casually flipping through papers, the suspense was just so funny to me. And that's a really dark thing, but when you see it in the movie, they play it exactly right. And so Todd Phillips, yeah, he has a history of comedy, but there are a lot of directors who've been given that chance. There have been directors who were doing these other things and they're suddenly given this big project and they're able to run with it. You know, when Christopher Nolan got when he first got Batman, he was known for Memento and really these smaller movies, and then he was suddenly given a budget. I mean, the guy that took over Spider-Man, his movie was 500 Days of Summer. And it's like you're giving him this giant superhero movie. I mean, there are risks that they take with these directors. So for Todd Phillips, one other example I'd give, Jordan Peele. Jordan Peele has been strictly comedy his whole career, right? But
and
his
he
first
recently
director
did
movie,
a horror.
Yeah, and then he directs Get Out, and you're like, Jordan Peele's doing a horror movie? Huh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird. And it works great. So I think the same thing is going on with Todd Phillips. I mean, yes, when I first heard about it, it's like, I don't know if this is really a good idea. But everything I've been seeing and hearing since says it sounds like Todd Phillips got it right. It sounds like that he's been able to find that balance and that he's been able to measure it right. And, you know, Joaquin Phoenix, I think, is one of the best actors working today anyway. It sounds like he gets everything right. So, yeah, Todd Phillips does sound like a gamble on paper, but I would say that there's enough darkness in the comedies he's done that made me think it wasn't a completely stupid move.
Okay. Interesting.
So while you're talking too, I started thinking about this. This is a golden opportunity for Warner Brothers and for DC. But the crazy thing is as golden an opportunity as it is, you look at their track record. They release a dark Batman, Tim Burton, in 1989, and you think, man, they've got it right. And then they go and do Batman Returns, and then things start to go downhill, right? And still, yeah. One of my favorite films is Batman Forever, and I don't care if people liked it or not. I loved it. But things start going downhill. They struggle. Things aren't going so well. And then they come out with Dark Knight. Or no, Batman Begins. All of a sudden, the hype is back. It's like, dark, it's good, it's getting better. And a golden opportunity for them. And then they falter. Dark Knight Returns wasn't that good. I didn't like it all that much. And so then they start faltering. They come out with Suicide Squad, which did really well for them, was decent of a film. But they've struggled. Batman and versus Superman, I didn't like. I didn't think it was great. I didn't think it was good at all. And then you get Justice League, which was decent. This is an opportunity for them because they've got this, and now they're headlining. They're throwing a guy out there that's going to be their new Batman. You got to run with this, and hopefully they run this time, and they don't have the two good movies and then flop, 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 and then back to two good movies. Maybe they can build on this and go upwards instead of back down.
I just need to check. You said the Dark Knight was not very good.
Dark Knight Rises or Dark Knight Returns.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rises. Okay. Rises. Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight was good. I liked that. And I thought Heath Ledger was a very good Joker. That was a great film. No, it was the next one with Bane. It was just not good. I mean, it was fun to watch. It just wasn't good. And then it leaves you hanging at the end. And then because it wasn't good, they didn't do anything else with it. That was done. And
well, Nolan wanted to end on that note and then move on.
That was horrible.
I agree. The only Batman movies that I haven't watched more than once is Dark Knight Rises and Batman and Robin.
Yeah, same.
And it's not like Dark Knight Rises is the second worst Batman movie ever made. It just wasn't that enjoyable. I didn't like how they had Batman retire for 7 years. I didn't like how Bane's plan was to just have Gotham be under this 5-month-long bomb threat.
Well, and then Nolan,
so that Batman could recover from his injuries in time.
And then Nolan sets up Robin, and then you're done.
That's fine. That's a thread that someone else can pick up if they want to. I was okay with that, but it just wasn't fun. It was just kind of sat there.
But they do.
And I had a hard time understanding what Bane was saying.
Yeah, that's true too. But I think they need to ride this wave. You've got this opportunity here. You've got a new Batman in the making behind there. You can really do something very well with this new genre, this new era of actors and opportunities, and you've got to run with it. I mean, Jared Leto wasn't that bad of a Joker either, and I almost wonder if you don't want to just all of a sudden say, thanks for doing Suicide Squad, we don't need you anymore. I almost wonder if you can bring him back somehow into the Batman movies. I don't know, but you don't want to drop DC's opportunities are right in front of them. They don't want to screw it up. In the meantime, they've got Titans coming out that's coming out on a streaming service, and I'd like to see that. I've heard great things about that. But DC's got opportunities they don't want to drop the ball on.
See, here's the thing that works for me with this one, is it's a prequel, and it's not something that we've seen before.
Right.
And that's, I think, part of the success of the Gotham series on Fox that I appreciated, is I was getting a different angle of a story that was familiar. So I don't know where they go from this. I don't know if there's other prequels they can do.
I don't know.
You know, I like that. I appreciate when there's something unique coming to the table, even if it's not completely new.
Yeah.
And that's part of the value I see in this is, okay, this is a backstory, and we see it from a different angle.
And John, I don't know if you agree, but they've done, I think, better with their series overall recently than they have with their movies. The Flash, Green Arrow, they've done really well and had moderate to good success with those series, and now Titans. Is this maybe a direction they'll go instead of trying to model after the Disney? I mean, I almost feel like they're trying to follow what Disney's doing and kind of handle both streams and kind of connect them all, but I almost feel like their series has been where it's at for them.
Well, they're keeping their series and movies separate, which I think is smart.
Right.
And they also have abandoned going the Marvel Cinematic Universe route because they try to do shortcuts when they did it anyway. So I'm glad that they're okay letting Jared Leto be Joker over here and then having Joaquin Phoenix being Joker over here. And I think the plan is to eventually have Phoenix's Joker meet up with Robert Pattinson's Batman. But you know, you have a couple more Harley Quinn movies coming out, and my understanding is they still would like to have a Harley Quinn Joker movie, but you have Birds of Prey coming out in February, and then Harley Quinn's going to be in Suicide Squad 2. But I like that DCU is just kind of focusing on let's just make our individual movies, and we'll worry about how we can bring them together later, rather than bringing all the characters together at once, even though they haven't had their individual movies to shine yet. I think one of the big mistakes of Batman versus Superman was that Affleck never got his own movie first.
Right.
The Wonder Woman thing wound up paying off, but then Justice League, you bring in Cyborg and Flash, and Cyborg just wound up being not a very interesting character, and there were a ton of rewrites with him anyway, and you know, it's
right.
Aquaman wound up paying off. That I'm happy for them, but
yes.
But DCU is just focusing on let's and before we start trying to build this universe, let's just focus on making the individual movies good, and then we can go from there.
Okay, that's fair. I can see your point. That's fair. All right. Well, I don't think we have anything else. That's it for pop culture. That's it for the show this week. We want to thank you all for joining us each and every week. We appreciate your support, and we've been at it. By the way, we didn't even mention, this is episode number 200. Happy 200, guys. Or is it 201 now? No, this is 200.
This is 201.
No, it's not.
It's 201. You missed it.
No, I didn't.
You missed it. This is...
Somebody prove me wrong
is
right
it,
now.
Is it 200? Maybe it's 200.
I think you're lost. It's 200.
Oh, I know what I did because the technical because difficulties.
Because the technical difficulties, yes. This is number 200. Happy 200, guys. We've been at it for 5 years and 200 episodes.
Oh, wow. We're getting old.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So we appreciate everybody's support for the last 5 years for these 200 episodes. Thanks. And we're hoping to continue on for many more to come, at least for a while. We love it. So thank you all. You know where to find us and where to listen and where to join our discussion. We'll talk to you real soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.